Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, gang, welcome back. Sports Talk Saturday. Nick Geary here hanging out with you and bringing you the takes that you all need in your life to get through your bye week blues. Is it bye week blues? Is that what we're kind of dealing with? I don't know. Are people happy it's the bye week? Are
I got sad. They're 7-3. You got to be feeling pretty good.
I think you're feeling okay. I know my next guest here on the West Her Hotline. I don't know how great he's feeling about his squad, which is kind of why we brought him on, so that we can ask him about his squad to make us feel better about ours. Bringing in Michael Kist of SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation. Michael, tell us, we were actually just spending an entire segment. We actually don't even need you now because we were just talking about the Eagles for a whole segment. So if you want, you could just leave now.
Yeah, you really brought me in as a sacrificial, a big old sacrifice at the altar here with the Eagles talk. But look, I cover the whole NFL. And I am fully embracing that this year with how bad the Eagles are. So if we don't want to talk about the Eagles, we don't have to. We can talk about the Bills. We can talk about the sun. We can talk about the moon. Whatever you want to talk about, Nate.
I think we'll talk about the Eagles at least a little bit before we get into some of the other storylines that are around the league. I think the birds right now, and I think birds are having a tough year in general in the NFL playing offense in a league and in a season, Mike, that everyone and their mother is playing. And Corey and I, my producer, we were just kind of talking about this last segment about how the entire league is playing offense at a clip that is definitely unsustainable for the future. But it's also pretty awesome, and to see like basically 25 to 28 teams playing at an unbelievably efficient and fun level of offensive football. And then there's a couple of teams that just haven't caught up to the party. I find it super interesting the Ravens are one of them, but the Eagles, I think, are one of them too. To me, though, Mike, the Eagles have an excuse. I mean, they have more injuries than I think I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, for me, how, like, if you were to put a percentage, let's forget about injuries for a second, and let's just put on, let's raise up our two kings, right, which is Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. And if you had to put a percentage of blame for where they are right now in a division that's probably going to go down as one of the worst in NFL history, and they still have an opportunity to win it, so, like, which one of those guys is going to be the reason that you get there? But I think the real question is, which one of them is going to hold you back from getting there?
Yeah, I think it's in vogue to blame Doug Peterson and the play calling right now, and I think that is a bit overblown. Everything looks better when your quarterback is playing better. And right now, Carson Wentz is playing like one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. You know, you can look at against the Giants game, like, he wasn't terrible. He also wasn't good. He wasn't good enough to win the game, and it's the Giants. So yeah. I honestly place a large part of the blame on Carson Wentz if we're going percentage-wise. Now, the problem is there's nothing else really helping him. I kind of defended Doug Peterson there. But, you know, if I'm putting 60% of the blame on Carson, I'm putting 20% of the blame on Doug Peterson, And then, like, the rest you can spread out between the fact that they've had 17 different combinations of a starting offensive line. There were four drops in the Giants game. That was tied for most in the league for the week. The receiving core overall hasn't been solid, but overall it comes back to quarterback play. And Carson, he's just not jiving with the offense. I don't know if it's something with the offensive game plan. They're not going with the offensive coordinator. There's been a lot of shuffling there. But it's not working for him, and he hasn't been accurate, and he hasn't been decisive. And I think the big problem with the Eagles is the fact that I mentioned all those different things being wrong. One of those things is going wrong on any given play. So it's not just, oh, well, you know what? If we get Carson right, everything will be golden, right? It's you have to fix the offensive line. You have to fix the game plan, and you have to get the receivers going, and then you have to get Carson going. So there's a lot of different factors that are going into this. There's a lot of blame to go around. It's hard for me to blame just one guy. But ultimately, I think if Carson is playing just like an average quarterback, things are looking a lot better. But that hasn't been the case.
You know, Mike, too, I think the one issue, the one factor that it's not really a measurable factor, it's not time and pressure. And, you know, both of those things are mounting in Philadelphia because of the, frankly, we can say everything negative about this team that we want to, but at the end of the day, they have a very good opportunity to be in the show at the end of the season. And you know that when you get there, if the Eagles can find ways to get healthy at a couple really key positions, and maybe they draw a favorable first round matchup, all it takes is a couple of late December wins or early January win, and you're talking about a completely different story than you are right now. The problem is, Michael, if it doesn't, and you get to next season, and for whatever reason, the Philadelphia Eagles are not your NFC East, you know, division champ at the end of the year, that would first and foremost be a very, very, very symbolic disappointment for that Eagles team. That might be one of the worst disappointments you could come across. But I think that what would be more concerning to be, Mike, at that point, if they missed the playoffs and they go into next season after getting healthy and maybe making a couple of free agent moves and bring in some nice pieces in the draft, how much that time and pressure accumulating on Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson, like what that does to the anticipation, but maybe more importantly, like what people expect of the Eagles next year. I just think that's a lot to ask, and it's going to come down more than likely to next year, no?
Yeah, I mean, they're tied to Carson Wentz. His contract, they're not getting out of it. And I think in turn, that means that they're tied to Doug Peterson. So like, no matter how much that pressure, you know, you talk about pressure, that pressure builds to, you know, fire Doug Peterson and bench Carson Wentz, and they have no interest in benching Carson Wentz right now. They haven't shown any interest in that. Even in his worst games, like first half of the Cowboys game, Carson Wentz was getting outplayed by a Ben DiNucci, right? And they asked Doug Peterson, did you ever think about benching Carson? And he's like, no. They just have no interest in it. And there has been a lot of expectations put on this team, and they have fallen pretty flat every single year, and there's been every single excuse, you know, under the sun. But, I mean, when you look at it, they're screwed to the point where if they don't turn this around, this doesn't look like it can be good again until 2023. With the cap situation that they're in, you know, you mentioned bringing in key free agents and everything like that. They're so cap strashed, they're going to have to strip a lot of their guys. You mentioned this season getting guys back. Some of those guys, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, Alshon Jeffrey possibly, so on and so forth. Yeah, that's great, but none of it's working anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't really think they're capable of making a run and playing consistent football on both sides of the ball, playing complementary football. And I don't see how that changes going into next year because they've had so many decisions gone south on them that it just looks all bad. And honestly, like, is it a blessing for them not to win the NFC East? Because that means a lot of things have to go wrong for them. If they can have some little things go right, yeah, they can make the playoffs, but like, how does that help them long term? And I think that's like where I struggle. You know, when I cover this team, I'm trying to say, okay, do you want to tank? Do you want to pick? Or do you want to be the worst team in the playoffs and move back, you know, 15 draft slots? So it's not fun to watch either way because you're kind of screwed both ways. So, but to your point, like this thing is Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson through 2021, most likely. And then some decisions might have to be made. But they're so tied up with their contracts, with their current roster. That's just the way it is. They have to make a play for it, and it just doesn't look realistic. And I think a lot of heads are going to roll eventually, but not as quick as people want in Philadelphia.
And I guess the question, that the follow-up has to be, if they just have no mind to bench Carson Wentz, like, why then in a season when you have the deepest wide receiver draft? And I know you guys, like, they took somebody in the first round. I get it. So, like, they took care of a need at wide receiver with Jalen Reagor. But at the same time, like they had a prime second-round pick that they spent on a quarterback that you now have zero interest in actually seeing play. Like, how does that... How do you go back? I know it's a second-round pick, but second-round picks in years past, I mean, the Bills are starting a second-round pick at their offensive line. Like, those are areas that you can really help your team in terms of depth, and this is a team that desperately needs depth. Like, I guess I just go back to that Jalen Hurts pick, and I think, as much as I love Jalen Hurts, if you have no interest or don't believe at all there's a scenario he can play, then that pick has to really come under fire.
Yeah, and that shows a disconnect between the coaching staff and the front office, in my opinion. I don't think Doug Peterson was there banging the table for Jalen Hurts to a degree. Like, I think he liked him. But you're right. Second-round picks have value. He could be playing, you know, that second outside cornerback spot. He could be a nickel corner. He could be a pass rusher. He could be a linebacker, which they have, like, the worst linebacking group in the NFL. It could be any number of things that isn't a quarterback that not only do they have no interest in playing, but when he does play, when he does get snaps, when he does have his packages, he's not throwing the ball anyway. And they're doing this thing where, like, he comes in for his read option. You know, he's got six or seven snaps or whatever. And they've still got Carson Wentz out on the field because they want him to feel good. And they're just playing 10 on 11. It's mind-bogglingly dumb to think that, okay, maybe they bring Jalen in because they think, okay, well, we might need to get through a stretch if Carson Wentz is injured. Well, Carson Wentz has been one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league this year, hasn't been injured. He played in 17 games, got knocked out for one in the concussion in the playoffs last year. But, like, on the whole, Carson, who has, you know, a knock of being injury-prone, has been incredibly sturdy for them over the past 2 years. And there's no reason for Jalen to be there. Those snaps could absolutely be somewhere else, and I think that's part of the frustration of the Eagles fan base, especially when you look at the wide receivers, because there are plenty of guys out there, and they put resources into wide receiver, but they drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside instead of D.K. Metcalf, right? That's the big talking point. They drafted Jalen Reagor, and the Minnesota Vikings there are throwing a party as soon as they put the pick in because they go get Justin Jefferson. Everything they've done has just been the wrong decision since 2017, and it's been just a steady decline to here, and here is miserable. I hate it here, Nate.
Yeah, well, I can tell you as an experienced person being there, it is not a great place to be. And I think, too, you know, this is a good transition opportunity for both of us to move away from talking about the depression that I can absolutely hear in your voice to talking more about a team like with the Baltimore Ravens right now, who I find to be just so intriguing, and I'm really looking forward to this bye week so that I could catch up and watch a little bit not only of some live game footage, but I want to go back and watch a little bit of this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Season, and particularly that game last week, because I know the rain played a big role in that game in New England last week, but it played a big role for both teams. And one team had answers and the other didn't. I'm really interested, Mike, in kind of your thoughts about where this Ravens offense is. And I can't remember exactly where you stood on this team last year. I was a big, big, big fan of Lamar. And I wasn't initially, and then what he was able to do last year, it felt like he was doing, because he was doing it so efficiently, felt like there was always going to be at least some slight regression built into that. But what we're seeing right now goes beyond play calling. It goes beyond execution or efficiency on the field. And it goes to a level of teams now know what they can't do, and they're forcing them to do what they can't do. And I find that to be really interesting. And I wonder if you think there is another layer to Lamar's game that he's going to have to find in order to refine some of the success he's had.
Yeah, I think that goes for Lamar, and I think that goes for offensive coordinator Greg Roman, right? Mm. And you were right. I think there was absolutely going to be some regression from that offense. I think all of, like, Lamar Jackson conversations are kind of stupid because they're usually made so simplistic when there's tons of nuance. This offense is regressing not just because Lamar is playing at a lower level. It's also because defenses are really starting to figure out how to play this offense. Mm-hmm. Now, the Ravens offense, what they want to do, it's weird because it's kind of counterintuitive. They're a smash spread offense. They want to spread you out, and they want to get their explosives on the edges. When you think about them, it's like heavy personnel and whatnot, and they want to pound you and so on and so forth. There's a little more finesse to their game than you would think. There's a little more spread type ideals in their game. What teams are finding out, and it's weird that teams didn't figure this out in 2019, because the Chargers laid the blueprint for this in 2018 in the wild card playoff game. They played a lot of dime packages. So a lot of speed in the box, that's going to combat that spread, right? Most teams are trying to load up against them with heavier personnel. They're bringing in dime. They're bringing in more DBs. They're also playing man coverage against them. You think the scrambling quarterback, it's death to play man coverage against a scrambling quarterback. But what they're doing is, because they're not afraid of Lamar Jackson hitting, you know, a deep ball, tight man coverage down the middle of the field, they're bringing in extra spies. They're bringing in underneath zones from that deep middle safety. They're bringing him forward. They're spying him. They're kind of bracketing Lamar, too. So they're not afraid to play man because they've got that extra hole defender that can keep an eye on him and kind of keep him corralled in. And Lamar, for his part, who is fantastic throwing against zone, great anticipation thrower, really accurate, those types of concepts, he struggles to put it, you know, in the right spot against tight man coverage, and that's what teams are doing against him. So, you know, the Ravens kind of have to loosen those defenses up a little bit. They got to run more man beaters. They got to get more manufactured touches to their speed guys on the edges. You know, Devin Duvernay would be a good example of that, getting him some early touches, you know, close to line of scrimmage, let him work the yak. But there's adjustments both to be made from Lamar throwing against man, and also that offense kind of opening up and you know, hurting teams for playing so much man, hurting teams for dropping that safety deep down and letting him spy Lamar. So there's a lot to go on there, and it's more complex than have the defenses figured out Lamar. They kind of have, but, like, he's still Lamar, and I think he's a really good quarterback, and I still think this offense can be something. Is it this year, or is it going to be another year? We saw this with the Rams, right? That post-Super Bowl hangover, that's where, right, they were just kind of stagnant for a whole year, and like now they're pretty functional again. So it all depends on how long that adjustment takes from the Ravens.
I also think, too, Mike, like part of the Rams' success is always going to be tied to Sean McVay, where his ability to reinvent his ideology or his methodology of his offense. I don't know that Greg Roman has the chef, you know, I don't think he's got the chef's hat to go in there in this offseason, reinvent what they have and make it more difficult to defend. I just, you know, that's where I think Lamar's limitations stem from this concept he's being asked to run. And that to me speaks more about the scheme that they're running because it worked last year. But was it going to work long term in that scheme? I'm not sure. I think eventually you are going to have to move Lamar into a more modern type passing offense. I still think, and I think both of us sound like we both agree, that he can exist in that type of offense, but are they going to put him in those situations? I'm not sure. And I guess that's ultimately going to be the test of time with Lamar is he going to be surrounded by good enough offensive play callers that can help him evolve because he is capable of evolution. It's just going to be whether or not he's actually put into a situation where he can prove that.
Yeah, and think about it too. Like, think about his offensive weapons. Right, like his number two receiver is Willie Snead. Like we don't talk about that enough.
I know.
If we were to look at his wide receivers, for most quarterbacks, we'd say, hey, this really isn't all that great. So I mean, you can help your quarterback by getting a Stephon Diggs, right? I mean, you see the difference when you have a wide receiver one run like that with DeAndre Hopkins, so on and so forth. Now he shouldn't necessarily need that, but having a more consistent wide receiver group would definitely help him. But I mean, Greg Roman, right? They figured him out in San, like defenses figured him out in San Fran a while ago. Now he makes this new baby with Baltimore, and that crushes the league. I think he can figure it out. Can he figure it out this year? I'm not so sure. So I think it is going to be another year before we really see. Okay. Lamar's back. Everything everybody said was stupid.
Yeah, right. That's kind of how that's how the ebbs and flows of the NFL go. And it's a year to year league, but it's a week to week league within seasons. And that has been probably proved more so this year than any year that I can remember. On the Western Hotline with me right now, I got Michael Kist of BGN Radio. One of my favorite parts of sort of the takes, right, that I know you and I think I brought you on the show the last time you were on, maybe like after week four, right mm-hmm. after Allen had that really great start to the season. And all of us were saying, yeah, but it was the Jets and the Dolphins. And I think that Dolphins win's looking a lot better now. I think the Rams win's looking pretty darn good right now. And I think after that Monday night performance, for the rest of the season, that Seahawks win is going to look better and better and better because, I mean, this. Here's my thing, too, that pisses me off about this, about the narrative surrounding the Seahawks game, Mike, is every single offensive coordinator that has played the Seattle Seahawks this season has had the opportunity to pull out that game plan. And just because the Bills are the only one that did it, like now the story is more about the lack of, you know, talent and the inabilities of the Seattle defense and not about the unbelievably gutsy play calling and game plan that Brian Daboll came out against to throw 28 times to running it only 3 in the first half. And you know, I think part of that has to be that the Bills were the only team so far to show the blueprint of how you absolutely take Seattle out of everything they want to do offensively.
Yeah, as soon as that game happened, everybody was like, whoa, this defense might be a problem. Well, you know, that kind of was lurking in the shadows for Seattle all season, and Brian Daboll just put just a gigantic spotlight on it. Huge credit to him. I mean, he schemed that up beautifully. And you're right, like making that decision to tilt all the way so in favor of the passing attack, other teams hadn't done that. So credit to him, and he cooked up like a beautiful one in that. I think that is going to look like a good win. Like this is in Buffalo last year where they're, you know, they've got a great record and you're like, but who have they beaten?
Right. I think totally different year this year, man. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Totally, very, very quality wins on their part, and they're getting good quarterback play. Now, you know, you mentioned week 4 and week 4 and on for Josh Allen. If you look at like his splits there, if you break everything off, I think you can see some weaknesses, but overall, like, even though Josh Allen has like regressed a little bit, if he's regressing to the mean, he's got a new mean. Like he's an above average quarterback as far as what I see. Now in the first 4 weeks, he was like, is this guy the MVP? Like what the heck is going on? But overall, I think if you have a good quarterback play was definitely holding them back last year. It's not this year. The defense, the passing defense, is starting to come around. They were a worry for a while. That's coming around. Like, I think this team is really built for the playoffs, and what they did against Seattle should be poo-poo because, number one, you make the favorite at the time for MVP, Russell Wilson, look a little silly, and then you also just do exactly what you should do against the Seattle defense and just cook them up. I thought it was a great game plan. I think they're a serious team moving forward, and you know me. I was not a fan of their prospects last year. I called them a paper tiger, and they were one and done in the playoffs. I don't think that's the case this year. I think they're serious.
All right, I got two more. I know I'm running a little up against my break here, but my producer's he doesn't care. So two things here for you. I don't know how much you've watched the Bills, but I think one of the things that I'm starting to find is the Bills are really struggling to run the football. And people are blaming Brian Daboll, but I actually think that Josh Allen probably wears more of the blame in terms of run. I also think that Josh Allen is asked to do more at the line of scrimmage in the run game, meaning checking to runs, staying into runs, check with me's, those types of plays. I don't know very many other young quarterbacks that are being asked to essentially put the offense in the right play as much as I've watched Josh Allen this year. And it's becoming more and more evident week in and week out that when they struggle to run the football, it's because teams are fooling Josh in the pre-snap, changing to something post-snap. He's got a great run look. He's checking to it. And then all of a sudden, it's no longer a good run look. So, like, where do you think, in terms of, like, what this team asks of Josh Allen to do pre-snap, like, where does that rank for you amongst other quarterbacks in the league? Maybe young quarterbacks, but just quarterbacks in general across the league.
I think for a third-year quarterback, like, he's pretty up there as far as responsibility. You know, I watched a lot of Carson Wentz coming up, and around the third year, you know, he was doing kind of the same thing. It's on the higher end of the scale. Like, if you get Mitch Trubisky, like, when you watch Mitch Trubisky versus Nick Foles in there, granted, both of them were not good this year, but Mitch Trubisky wasn't making any calls whatsoever at the line. Nick Foles gets in, all of a sudden you're hearing all these new words in the Chicago offense that you've never heard before. So I do think it's above average, and I think they should continue doing it, but I do think they're onto something. I think the run game struggling does have a lot to do, more to do with the quarterback than people think, because of them checking into those looks. So I think they're onto something there. However, I don't think Josh Allen is necessarily bad at it. And I give him credit for being able to do that because he's obviously probably doing some of that with the protections and so on and so forth too.
Yep.
So he's really come along in that regard. So, you know, let the guy run it, you know, and see what you get. And they're able to do that with Josh, which is a plus.
All right, 15 seconds. Jameis Winston, go.
Oh, man, I hope he starts for 100 years. This is my favorite quarterback in the NFL. I don't know why they're starting the old guy. Let the guy go in there and sling it and have some fun, just for my entertainment alone, because the Saints are so boring this year.
Yeah, Taysom Hill is, I think, old enough to be our dad. The fact that he's going to get an opportunity. I think Stephen Ruiz made a great point on Twitter. I think this decision is more to do with financial ramifications than it has anything else. But I agree with you. I want to see Jameis cook, and it's too bad. I don't think we're going to get to see it. And we're going to get to watch this sidewinder, sidearm, two-bit tight end playing quarterback. It'll be a good one to see. Michael, as always, brother, appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning, and I'll be paying attention as the rest of the season goes along. And hey, maybe we'll have you on again when we get closer to the playoffs.
Absolutely, man. Go Bills.
Appreciate it. Michael Kist there of Bleeding Green, which is on SB Nation, and you can check him out at Michael Kist on Twitter.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.